Welcome to Civil Discourse, a public affairs program of Gila Mimbres Community Radio. I'm your host, Jamie Newton. This special edition of Civil Discourse is a candidates' roundtable. My guests are all six candidates seeking public office in the Silver City municipal elections scheduled for March 4th, 2014, and as discussants to journalists who will ask questions. At the outset, I'll invite each candidate to give a 3 to 5 minute opening statement. Next, we'll address questions to the candidates for the offices of mayor and town council, and then to the candidates for municipal judge. Our discussions will reflect briefly on what they've heard, and the candidates will have an opportunity for short closing statements. We're broadcasting the candidates' roundtable live on Wednesday, February 5th, 2014. This program will be rebroadcast periodically until the election on March 4th, and it will be available by podcast. And now I'll introduce my guests in the order in which the candidates appeared on the statement of certification by the town clerk. Running unopposed for the office of mayor, Michael Sean Morones, welcome. Running for District 2 Councilor, Rebecca Spann, welcome. And Linda Amon-Smith, welcome.
Thank you.
Running unopposed for District 4 Councilor, Guadalupe Cano, welcome.
Thank you.
And for the office of Municipal Judge, Sonia Ruiz, welcome.
Thank you.
And Benny G. Montes, welcome. John Crow, our first discussant, is co-founder and publisher of Gila Community Net. That's a reader-supported, internet-based source of news, a calendar, and a forum for Grant County and Southwest New Mexico. Welcome, John Crow. And Richard Mahler is a journalist best known locally as a former Desert Exposure columnist who still occasionally writes for that paper, and also a fiction writer, editor, and media consultant. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
And I want to thank all of you particularly for being here on Civil Discourse and for the candidates for offering your time and your skills, your experience to serve the public. Democracy is precious to us all, and without people who are willing to do that, there could be no democracy. And without journalists, there would be little likelihood that the voters would have any kind of balanced perspective on democracy and on elections. That said, I'd like to begin with a 3 to 5 minute statement by each of the candidates for mayor and town council, again, in the order in which they're listed by town clerk Ann Mackey on the statement of certification. So we will begin with the candidate for mayor, Michael Morones.
Thank you. I appreciate being here for this forum, and thank you for providing this forum for our citizens. As you mentioned, I am running unopposed for mayor. And as such, going into this position, my main focus is going to be to provide and ensure that we have honest, open, and transparent government. It's very important for our citizens to be able to participate and work towards governance. A couple of the things that we're charged with, and I am specifically charged with, is ensuring our health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. And some of that is can seem pretty obvious. You know, public safety is one that jumps to mind, police and fire, and I want to make sure that they have the resources to do the jobs that they need to. Other parts of health is having healthy water, and I want to continue our healthy supplies and make sure that we have the infrastructure and everything to keep that in place. Some of the less obvious parts of health, safety, and welfare is our economic welfare and our social welfare. Some of the things that I've prided myself with and I have great interest in is that economic welfare, ensuring that we have good economic movement and flow and that we have efficient commerce as well as with on the social welfare side that we have good good, stable, and well-maintained libraries and museums, and do it in a fiscally responsible way, so that with the that we can continue this trend of good, good, clean audits with no findings, like we have in the last handful of years, and help support this quality staff that has led to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Moronis, candidate for mayor. And next, for District 2, Councillor Rebecca Spann.
Hi, thank you very, very much for having me. My name is Rebecca Spann, and I put my name on the ballot because I saw three unopposed races, and I don't think that's good for anybody. I'm representing small business. Small business has a very hard job trying to survive in an economy where governments think they need to tax more, regulate more, and spend more. And so I'm on that side of the fence. That's what I think needs to happen. I need representation for small business people that are struggling. We lived here 30 years ago, and as a result of my job, we had to move, and we moved back here last year, and I see there are less people here now than there were then. There's no industry. I'd like to see Votech programs that keep the copper here and not move it down to Mexico. There's reasons why we're not surviving and thriving in this economy, because we're moving all our jobs someplace else. So that's why I'm in this race, and I appreciate the opportunity to say so.
Thank you very much, Rebecca Spann, candidate for District 2 Councillor, and also running for District 2 Councillor, Linda Amon-Smith.
Thank you. I'm Linda Amon-Smith, and I just want to say a few things about myself and how I love Silver City. I want to start by saying I'm a multi-generational New Mexican. I was raised up in the north, up in Farmington, but my family has some roots down here. My paternal grandparents met and married in Las Cruces and started their family in Mesilla, and then they moved up north. So I do have some history down here, though it goes back to the greats. Let me tell you a little bit about my work experience. I honestly will say I've never run for public office, but I have held a variety of interesting jobs, interesting to me. Before I was 30, I had had four small businesses. So I really want to speak up about entrepreneurship and small businesses. And by the way, they all made money. They were successful businesses. I've had now in my life six small businesses. As well, I worked in big business. I was a corporate manager for Raychem Corporation. I worked in quality assurance and in operations. So I like to look at how things run. In fact, my favorite thing in the world is to learn new things and then figure out how I can help them run better. And I hope that if elected to council, that that's something that I'll have an opportunity to do with this wonderful town and with an admirable staff. I want to say that right off. I have a great deal of admiration for the fiduciary prudence that the town has shown. And I am a proponent of small business and entrepreneurship, as you might tell. I want to say that in none of the small businesses that I ran was I particularly feeling burdened with taxes and regulations, but I did feel a need for support from the local community. And that's what I want to encourage here is think local, buy local, invest local. So I want to encourage you all to come out and vote. I want to remind everyone listening that early voting starts on February 12th, and the actual election day is on March 4th. And so I want to encourage everyone to participate in our local democracy.
Thank you, Linda Amon-Smith, candidate for District 2 Councillor, and running unopposed for District 4 Councillor Guadalupe Cano.
Hello, I'm Guadalupe Cano, and I will be your next town councillor in District 4. I am replacing Councillor Morones, who will now be our mayor. District 4 encompasses precincts 14, 16, 19, and 32. It's a really diverse district with different needs. I really love the district because I was raised in Precinct 16 and now I live in Precinct... No, I was raised in Precinct 32 and now I live in Precinct 16, so it's a special part of town to me. I've been in Silver City for the entirety of my life, so 35 years, and I've been involved in several organizations around town, and I've been looking forward to serving the public a little bit more, so this is a good start for me. I feel like Silver City is a really sound, financially secure town, and it runs very efficiently, but often the general public really doesn't know what's going on. They don't really know what the process is to decide what improvements are going to be made and things like that. So I'm hoping to make the communication a little bit more open and try to get more people involved in our community and get involved in the government side of things. Really important to me also is for everyone to remember that it's important that we pass the public safety tax continuation. That's to ensure that our police department and our fire department both continue to have the money that they need to function at the level that they are. And it's not a new tax. It's just a continuation. So please remember to vote for that.
Thank you, Guadalupe Cano, candidate for District 4 Councilor. We'll move now to candidates for the office of municipal judge. And we'll begin with Sonia Ruiz.
Thank you. I was born and raised here in Grant County, and I have chosen to raise my family in this community. I began my career with municipal court as a court clerk and was promoted to the position of court administrator. I held that office for 5 years before my election in 2010. In 2001, I was honored with the appointment to alternate judge by Judge Rudy Hawkins and then by Judge Edith Gutierrez. I served in that capacity for a total of 9 years. In total, I have 13 years municipal judge experience, wearing the robe and hearing municipal offenses. My experience and expertise in court administration provide me a unique perspective as I understand and have implemented the job descriptions of each person in my court, distinguishing me as one of the few New Mexico municipal judges who can actually take a case from filing to completion. I bring the following qualifications to this office. I have successfully completed 14 municipal court professional development training conferences. I'm classified as a judicial facilitator through UNM School of Law and the New Mexico Judicial Education Center that allows me to train judges and court staff. I have completed Judicial Studies courses JUD 101 and 102 at TVI Community College, and I am a judicial mentor and serve on the New Mexico Judicial Education Committee. In my first term as judge, it has been a very successful one. My first accomplishment in office was the full automation of municipal court. By replacing the court's outdated software, which was an old DOS-based program, with a current Incode court software that is state-of-the-art Windows Word-based program. This program allows for up-to-the-minute stats and real-time data that benefits the town, the court, and the public. Secondly, I initiated a program called Actual Live Docket that allows me to input adjudication directly from the bench. The adjudication of cases and follow-through are completed in real time before the defendant even leaves the courtroom. Trials, subpoenas, and orders are now produced at the touch of a button. This active live docket has reduced the court's postage costs by 25%. Now, that may not sound like much to someone from the street, but what I will tell you is just by hand-delivering defendants their trial notices at the time that they plead not guilty, I have been able to trim $1,000 off of the cost of postage in municipal court in the first year alone. The third program is the Scram Ankle Monitor in lieu of jail. Defendants facing jail for nonviolent offenses may pay a fee and use a monitor as a house arrest option, saving the municipality the cost of jailing nonviolent offenders. And last but certainly not least, I successfully completed the implementation of the video arraignment program. This program allows for me to arraign prisoners from the courtroom via an internet connection directly from Grant County Detention Center. This process allows for arraignment as many times a day as needed, and the process is conducted with the use of a few cameras and an internet connection. This lends itself to all the requirements of having a full open court. This program will save the municipality thousands of dollars every year by allowing the police to focus on public safety. They may now remain on the streets serving the public instead of driving back and forth into the county to deliver prisoners to and from the court. I am very proud to say that I was able to implement all of these programs at little to no cost to the municipality. All of these purchases were paid for with funds from a state-run automation program. Since my date of election, I have secured $72,000 for the court out of this program. This is the actual amount of reimbursement to the town of Silver City for the purchases required for these programs. With your vote, I plan to continue to keep municipal court moving forward using technology, knowledge, and by implementing a fiscally sound plan to better our court and the services that I can provide to you. I attribute much of my success to my knowledgeable and hardworking staff who work diligently to make Silver City Municipal Court the model court that it is today. With your continued support, I will continue to move municipal court forward. Vote Sonia Ruiz on March 4th.
Thank you, Sonia Ruiz, candidate for municipal judge, and also running for municipal judge, Benny G. Montes.
Very impressive, Judge Ruiz. Okay, my name is Benny G. Montes. I was born in Silver City, and when I was about 6 years old, we moved to Hurley. My father got a job in the mine, and we had housing over there. And I've been a resident of Silver City for 40 years. I've been through, well, first of all, I was on both sides of the law. I was a deputy sheriff from 71 to 76, and then I've been appointed. I've worked a few days for Judge Shaw when he used to have both municipal and magistrate offices, and then the Supreme Court of the state said that he couldn't have both, so he kept the magistrate judge. And he asked me if I wanted to be interested in being appointed municipal judge. So I was appointed for a few months, and then I ran. I think it was in 1990. That's been quite a while. So anyway, after that, I went ahead and I ran. I got elected for 4 years. And then the second term, unfortunately, I lost. I think it was Mr. Asa Kelly, who was an attorney. So I've been back and forth. I've been a probate judge here for the county for twice. And if I do get elected, or when I get elected, I will catch up with a knowledge of the municipal court. I have to go to a few schools, but I've been there before, so I think I'm qualified to run for or be elected municipal judge. And I got I'm married to the former Carol Delgado from Santa Rita. I got two sons, Paul Montes, retired from the police department here in Silver, and Mark Montes works for the Bear Police Department. And that's about it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Benny Montes, candidate for municipal judge. We'll now go to our discussants, and they will have a question each. Kyle, I'll look to you to tell me when we're ready to take a break. We're a little bit ahead of our schedule. So we'll begin with questions for the candidates for mayor and town council, and in a sort of a random order. Let me begin with John Crow for a question.
Let's talk about the whole hardware situation where
money coming into the town is decreasing. In fact, it may, after this year's legislature, may decrease faster. So I guess you will determine the order. So let's talk about Hold Harmless.
May we begin with Guadalupe Cano?
Okay, well, you really didn't ask a question, but from what I know of Hold Harmless, it's definitely going to be a concern. There's going to have to be cuts made in the budget based on the fact that the legislature will probably continue to not do much as far as that goes. I know that the town is very fiscally responsible right now, that every department is working as hard as they can to continue to be that way. And I feel that we're going to be in really good hands because we happen to have a certified accountant going to be our mayor. So I'm looking forward to working with him to find the places that need to be cut.
And since Guadalupe Cano thought there wasn't quite a question there, would you like to enlarge on that at all?
Well, yeah, what action should we take?
And since he's asked that, do you have anything else to say? What action should we take? No.
I think it's just a matter of finding the places where things can be cut and being really responsible about where those are.
Linda Amon Smith.
So a little bit of the background. At one point, food and other services were taxed, and then a legislature passed a law saying that they would not be taxed. And part of that law was that there would be funds coming to the municipalities from the state, and that's stopping. I mean, you know, from the state to the municipalities, and that's stopping. And I look at it this way. If you have, if you know that your revenue from a particular source is going to decrease, but you want to provide, as we've all, I think, thought are important, things like clean water and roads and those services that a town really our contract with our citizens from the town is that the town provides services and then the citizens support the town. So you have to think, well, if the revenue's not going to come from that particular stream, what can we do? Do we need to cut things that or combine things? I mean, for me, combination might be a better thing. If you bundle some services together, maybe they won't cost as much as if you keep them separate. Or are there opportunities for other revenues coming in? And one of the things is that the gross receipts tax that is paid on various kinds of services and goods that are sold in our town is a big revenue stream. Well, maybe we could up that, not from upping the tax, but by getting more people to buy within the municipality, which goes along with the think local, buy local kind of a thing. Every time that you buy something, dare I say it, from Amazon, we don't yet have any of the taxes that come from that. So perhaps UPS is making some folks have jobs here in the town, but it might not be a good one-to-one. So I think about it in terms of what can you bundle, what services might, or departments might need to be trimmed, but really much more, really how could we grow revenue in another way that doesn't burden the citizens, but yet improves the town.
Thank you, Linda Amon Smith. Rebecca Spann.
I believe that government taxes people too much and spends too much. So people need to step up. If they want to have a better quality of life, they need to support their local economy. I personally do not shop at Walmart because I shop at local businesses. If you want to support your town, you need to put your money out there where it is.
Thank you, Rebecca Spann. And Michael Moronis.
Thank you. You know, it is an interesting question and quite a dilemma that we're going to be faced with, not just this upcoming council, but many future councils. Going back a little bit to the history of this Hold Harmless, for decades, the town and towns across the state had grown accustomed to certain revenues generated from the tax of food and medical services. About a decade ago, the state determined that it was, I'm going to actually say, politically in to their advantage to cut those taxes and give themselves a feather in their cap. Now, they did recognize that when they did that, they were going to affect all the towns throughout the state. So they said, since we made this decision, we are going to hold those municipalities harmless for our decision. And we are going to pay them what they would have received had we not changed that law. So we've been receiving this Hold Harmless tax for a decade since that was enacted. Well, fast forward 10 years, and we lose a little bit of that history, and the state representatives are wondering, why are we paying, why are we holding them harmless for this? We didn't, us new state senators and representatives, we didn't do this to them, so why are we giving them money? So at this point, they're wanting to take that back. They want us to be harmed by that decision they made 10 years ago. Well, for Silver City, that equates to about $1.8 million. Comparable to our entire budget for our police. So it's one of those decisions, if we were just to do a simple hacking method, say, well, we got less revenue and we're just going to decrease our budget accordingly, let's just do away with the police department. Well, it's counterintuitive, especially when we're charged with health, safety, and welfare of our citizens. We have quite a dilemma. So we need to figure out how we're going to do that, how we're going to divide that burden up. The state has given us certain authority to increase taxes on our own. They're saying, okay, well, we got our feather in our cap, and now we don't want to pay for that feather in the cap. But we're going to let you guys be the bad guys, and we're going to authorize you to increase taxes if you want to make your budget whole. Otherwise, we're just going to say, hey, you guys don't know how to run your own budget. That being said, we have some very hard decisions as this, if they do determine that they're going to take away this hold harmless, and right now they're looking at phasing it out over multiple years, we're going to have a lot of a very strong debate and discussion whether we want to take advantage of that other taxing authority and to basically provide the services we've always provided that our citizens have grown accustomed to. And it's going to be tough.
Thank you, Michael Moronis. We'll return after a brief break to Civil Discourse, our special Candidates Roundtable program.
This is Gila Members Community Radio, and you're listening to Civil Discourse with your host, Jamie Newton, on KURU 89.1 FM, Silver City, New Mexico, and on the web at gmcr.org. A voice and a choice for Southwest New Mexico.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, a public affairs program of Gila Members Community Radio. I'm Jamie Newton. And if you're just joining us, this special edition of Civil Discourse is a candidates roundtable with all six candidates for office in the March 4th, 2014 Silver City municipal elections. We've heard opening statements from the candidates. We've heard responses to a question from one of our discussants, John Crow. And I'll turn now to Richard Mahler to ask a question also of the candidates for town council and mayor.
Becky Spann said something interesting in her opening statement that in the 30 years she's been gone, the population of Silver City has actually declined. And in our last 10-year census, it showed another decline. We're kind of dancing around the topic of economics, and with the economy fell off a cliff here a few years ago, a lot of stores closed, a lot of people had to leave. We have a lot of empty homes. Our real estate prices fell. The mines closed for a while. I'd like to hear the candidates talk about what they see or what their vision is of the economic future of Silver City. Is it in tourism? Is it in art and culture? Is it in encouraging the mining industry to grow, making it a retirement destination, a place for high tech? Do you have some sense of where the economic engine is going to be for this community during the time you're in office, and what can the council and mayor do to encourage that kind of economic development?
And we'll begin with the candidate for mayor, Michael Moronis.
Thank you. It's a very good question. I'm going to start off with just articulating a little bit of the commerce that is present, and as it relates to even our population. You know, 30 years ago, I was riding my bike around town and with very little traffic, mainly because there wasn't that many people. There wasn't the traffic. There wasn't the commerce. Our population inside our borders were slightly higher, though. We were probably pushing 12,000 people. Interestingly enough, inside our town borders, the population has shrunk, but with a very small perimeter, maybe only 3-4 miles, our population has actually blossomed to where we actually have a much heavier population than we did back then. And right now, what we do is, during the day, we may sleep 10,000 at night. We have a commercial population during the day closer to 18,000 people. So, and that's why we have much more traffic. We actually look like we're not engineered for the traffic we actually do have, is we do have more people in this area. Our metropolitan area is much greater and much more viable. Interestingly enough, we do have a change in dynamics of what feeds that economy. Historically, 30 years ago, my parents, my dad and my grandparents all worked at the mines. And this was a mine that was supporting 3,000 plus people per site. And as technology has grown, as the haul trucks have gotten bigger and everything else, they have needed less people to operate that mine. So now we're probably closer to 500 to 1,000 people manning the mines. Yet, why do we have more people doing commerce here? Is we are growing as an economy. Our Gila Regional Medical Center is much bigger than what Hillcrest was. The university has expanded. We have become a retirement community, which we never were before. We are a tourist destination and an arts and cultural district. We are also the professional center for a huge area. We have nearly 40 doctors, 20 CPAs, 20 lawyers, a handful of architects and engineers. We are the professional center for three counties. And that's what we need to foster. We need to be attractive. We need to make sure that we maintain the ability to attract those professionals to come here and continue to bring in and draw that commerce from those three counties so that we don't lose spillage don't continue to feed this cultural background that attracts these high-paid professionals.
Thank you, Michael Moronis. And Rebecca Spann, candidate for council from District 2.
My thought was, we have all this copper in the world here. Why are we sending it down to Mexico to be fabricated? And why do we not have these modifications up here in Silver City where we have the need for the jobs? Why are we sending all the jobs elsewhere? That was our thought. We could do wiring, we could do copper pipes, we could do all of that, and then we could put it on the trains and send it elsewhere, as opposed to sending it elsewhere, and then we have no jobs for the young people that do not want to go into the professions that you just talked about. There's a lot of kids that have to leave Silver City because there are no jobs here that can provide for their families. So There's reason to have industry here and not ship it out of state or out of the city.
Thank you, Rebecca Spann. Linda Amonsmith.
Thank you. You know, the largest employers now in Silver City are the hospital, the university, and the biggest of all is actually the government supported, and that's the police force and the educators. So there's an economic engine that folks don't seem to really think about. I want to let you know, Richard, that we have lost population inside the town, but inside the town, our median income has gone up in the last 10 years. And one of the ways I like to think about economic development is that you want to have big pipes of money coming in, and you want to have little pipes of money going out. You don't want to have that spillage, and you want to have a lot of recirculation in the middle. That's the pipe model. And there are little economic engines that we maybe don't notice and don't think about. Tourism is actually a huge revenue stream. Now, the issue with tourism is that traditionally you think of it as being kind of low-wage jobs. And indeed, if you look at the big data, retail and tourism tends to pay closest to the minimum wage, but it doesn't have to be that way. There's an idea of tourism of place, history, culture, recreation, and food that we can really tap into. Do you guys realize that we've been written up in the past 3 years, numerous times in national publications for our food? There are ways to attract people to our town where we can create opportunity for young folks. I have these ideas. One of the things that I really want to work on and am working on is with the university and in the School of Business to get entrepreneurship practicums going with some of those students so that they can really learn how to spot opportunities and start a business that will keep them going. There are lots of opportunities here, so I'm just going to close with one that is completely invisible, and that is what is sometimes called free agents or lone eagles or distance workers. I just finished a small survey of 22 people in Silver City within the town limits who really work via the internet as free agents, freelancers, technical editors, translators, software developers, designers, and educators. All of them made 2.5 times the median salary of everyone else in Silver City. That's what we really need, is to attract people, or it could be a nice little engine, to attract people who have skills that can be used and sold anywhere as long as they have the appropriate broadband and technology to do so. So we have a lot of opportunity.
Thank you, Linda Amon-Smith, candidate for District 2 Council, and Guadalupe Cano, candidate for District 4 Council.
One of the things that you mentioned was the fact that Silver City is a retirement community. I think that that's something that we really need to consider and continue to work to bring more retirees here. I know that sounds crazy since I'm probably one of the younger people that wants to hold office, but a lot of my friends, my high school friends, have gone away and raise their families, and you know they're in the middle of their careers and they're already looking at retirement and they all want to come home. So in the next 5 to 10 years, people are going to start coming back, and I think we need to be prepared for that and offer opportunities for retired people as well. And I also think that the Arts and Cultural District just continues to blossom, and the more it's supported, the more it will blossom and more people will come here, so tourism will definitely increase.
Thank you, Guadalupe Cano. I think our time will allow us to have a follow-up question either from John Crow or Richard Mahler to what we've just heard, and we'll ask each of the candidates for mayor and city council to speak to that very briefly. Would one of you like to ask a follow-up question?
Just in case the legislature does not act on the raising the minimum wage, will you as town council act to raise the minimum wage here in Silver City?
May we ask Rebecca Spann, candidate for District 2, to respond to that?
Absolutely
first.
Not.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
No.
Linda Amon-Smith, also candidate for District 2?
Yeah, if you look at data from the Economic Policy Institute and the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the minimum wage hasn't gone up in a long time, and it's actually like fallen way down in terms of real dollars. And I know that that pundits write about how, you know, if you raise the minimum wage, it necessarily means that you lose jobs. But that is data from the early 70s done by flawed methodology. If you look at some of the more comprehensive recent papers, especially papers by Annette Dubay, who is one of my favorite labor economists, he says that actually, no. What happens is that if you raise the minimum age, he's got hundreds of studies that he's looked at. He's looked at comparative studies. What happens is that you have more money circulating in the community. Now, that's not to say that in some instances that, you know, some businesses might say, gosh, I really can't raise that wage. But particularly people think about the food industry as being really vulnerable. And it turns out it really isn't. They call this price elasticity. I hate using these terms, but I got it because they're in my mouth. And that just means how much will people stand to have prices raised. So if you're looking at like a $3 hamburger and then you raise the minimum wage 10%, what you're looking at is an increase of 6 cents, perhaps, in that particular portion. So it really, the scare factors about raising the minimum wage have really been put to rest by research over the last 15 years. Now, that said, I don't think that it is right to arbitrarily say we should raise the minimum wage to this without looking at the context and the local experience. And that would lead me to say, what really would be an appropriate minimum wage for our town? So I think that that would be something that if a counselor wanted, you know, council as a whole wanted to study, really what would be the appropriate minimum wage for a town of ours, given our cost of housing and our cost of, you know, how people live and transportation and food? I think that that would be a viable thing to do, would be to say what would be an appropriate minimum wage.
Michael Moronis, candidate for mayor. Minimum wage?
You're make me tackle this one, huh?
It's an invitation.
It's an invitation. I'll give the short answer, and then I'll elaborate on it. The short answer is, at the local level, I would not support us being the forerunner in this regard. The long answer is, I believe this to be a state or national issue. And why I say that is, at a local issue, if we raise our minimum wage, we end up putting ourselves in a very interesting dilemma of how do we compete with other municipalities. Right now, we're off the interstate, we're off the beaten path, and if it is easier for manufacturers or potential businesses to start a business in Deming because of cheaper labor, I don't think they're going to be looking north and come up 180 or come up on 90 and set up a business. So I would hate to set us up in a poor position to bring in new jobs by simply being the forerunner on a minimum wage issue. The other issue I do have is, though not all minimum wage earners are teens, there are still a large number of minimum wage earners who are 16, 17, 18. Many are 19, 20, 21-year-old college students. And I do not want to get into a position of potentially giving a living wage to a student who is being supported by their parents. Before, you know, even at a state and national level, I'm much more in favor of something if they can work towards not making our youth who live at home wealthy at sacrificing business profitability and expansion and growth and economic positioning. So there's a lot of issues that we have to hammer out, and it's a very complicated situation, and all that complexity just would reassure my belief that I do not want to be the front runner and put my municipality in a situation that could be detrimental.
Thank you, Michael Moronis and Guadalupe Cano, candidate for District 4 Councilor. The last word on minimum wage, at least for now.
Well, I'd like to say that I agree with Mr. Moronis that it would be nice to see the state decide what is going to happen instead of having to be the county, the municipality that decides that we're going to be the front runner in that. However, if a minimum wage, if that became an issue that the council needed to tackle, I think my main concern would be speaking with local business owners and really seeing exactly how it was going to affect their businesses first. And if it's necessary for us to do this, then I would say increasing the minimum wage in increments, not just automatically it's, you know, $10 when it was, you know, it wasn't yesterday, would probably be the best way to do this. And it would just involve a lot of studying first before any decision was made.
Thank you, Guadalupe Cano. We'll move to a break. And when we return, we will shift gears with questions for the candidates for the position of municipal judge.
This is Gila Members Community Radio, presenting Civil Discourse with your host, Jamie Newton, on KURU, 89.1 FM, Silver City, and on the web at gmcr.org. This is what community radio looks like. This is GMCR.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, a public affairs program of Gila Members Community Radio. I'm your host, Jamie Newton, and if you're just joining us, this special edition of Civil Discourse is a candidates roundtable with all six candidates for office in the March 4, 2014 Silver City municipal elections. We've heard an opening statement from each of the six candidates. Our discussants have asked questions of the candidates for mayor and town council, and we now turn to questions for the candidates for municipal judge. Richard Mahler, will you ask the first question?
Yeah, I'd like to ask both candidates about their opinion about alternative sentencing versus mandatory sentencing, especially for youth offenders. There was some reference to that in the one of the opening statements, but given that we have a large youth population in this town, we have some issues with gangs and drug abuse, what's your feeling about having some discretion in sentencing of especially youth?
Let's begin with Sonia Ruiz, please.
Your question is a good question, and it's difficult. It's difficult for the courts, especially in small communities like ours where we don't have an abundance of programs to send people to. We don't have an abundance of treatment centers, nor do we have some people just don't have the means, the money to be able to enter into some of the programs that could really make big changes. But my opinion is that jail is not the answer for all offenses. Justice is not measured in dollars and cents. So when you have a strong judge, the court will utilize many forms of alternative sentencing. I use community service, driver's improvement courses, ankle monitors for jail, like I mentioned before, counseling, and a program that's unique to my court is the immobilization of motor vehicles. I feel that any judge can order a maximum fine, but it takes a good judge to take the time and research the issues to see past dollars and cents and to look at the root of what might be the problem. I have used different programs for teens. We had a great teen court program going for quite some time. I was able to utilize that a lot until there were some budget cuts in district court, and the first program to go was the teen court program. So although we don't actually have a letterhead and program director for that any longer, I still use alternative sentencing for juveniles. I've used things like writing essays about what you learned, what happened at home, what changed in your daily activities. Sometimes I just talk to individuals about, do you realize vehicles are weapons and that you could hurt somebody, you could kill somebody? What could only take seconds? What happens? I've had young offenders in my court. When I have them write this essay, they go home and they count the letters, you know, the numbers, number of words, because I say, you know, 100 words or less. So they'll count all of them, and then I make them stand up in open court and read it. And when they read it, they realize, oh, man, I just said, and I really feel like this, lots. So I stop the individual, and then I tell them, okay, that's what you wrote. Now tell me what you learned. And sometimes I get a good result, and not always. But if we touch one individual and we change the actions of that individual, we make our community safer. That's justice.
Thank you, Sonia Ruiz. Benny Montes, alternative sentencing.
A lot of these programs weren't available when I was a municipal judge. And people have asked me, I says, how come they don't, if you're a judge, how come you don't sentence people to, you want us to clean the streets in Silver City to help the town? I says, well, that comes in with, if they get hurt, who's liable, the city? The judge, or who's liable if they get hurt? That'll be answered by maybe the mayor's, you know, after a while. But I was thinking about that. I said, well, if we put them up to clean the streets or help the city, are we getting involved in something we can handle later on if somebody gets hurt? So I do believe in, like, ankle bracelets and essays, which weren't available when I was a municipal judge before. But if elected, or when I'm elected, I'll go ahead and look into all these matters and do it appropriate to sentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Benny Montes. What he's saying, sorry about, is that a microphone came out of the stand.
Yes.
For those of our listeners who didn't see that, Richard Mahler, your question to, I'm sorry, I began with you. John Crow, your question to the candidates for municipal judge.
Okay, I understand that when you levy a fine and the fine is not paid, then these people can be arrested, thrown in jail. And so in many places across the country recently, there's come up the issue of debtor's prison. So what do you think about that? And how are some creative ways to deal with it? Because I know the town, of course, always wants the money from the fines above anything else. So can you talk about all that?
Benny Montes, I'll ask you to speak to that first, if you will.
Okay, would you repeat that question again? Just the last part?
How to deal with, basically how to deal with people who don't pay fines and then are arrested and thrown into jail, and the issue of debtor's prison at that point, and some creative ways to deal with that.
I think that municipal judge is not here to make money for the city, but to dispense justice most of the time. Anyway, if we do give somebody 8, 7 days, 4 days in jail, then does the city pick up the tab for being incarcerated to feed him and medical? That's a big question. Maybe one of the mayor or council can answer that question. That's about it.
Yeah, the town probably picks up the tab.
Yeah, for prisoners. So we go back to square one and we'll see what happens.
Thank you, Benny Montes. And Sonia Ruiz, can you speak to this question of how to handle people who don't pay their fine and then essentially become wards of the government?
Okay. It also is a difficult issue because we certainly do not want to punish people for being indigent. But that being said, our community and our judicial system is set up to make sure that people make amends for their actions. And it's important that people do that. If you are convicted of a crime, it is important that you do something or the court does something to ensure that we don't have repeat offenders or to alter people's behavior. Okay? So there are other ways other than fines. Some people need fines, and that's a useful way of changing people's behavior. To answer my opponent's question, yes, the municipality does have to pay for the jail. That's not necessarily something that a judge should focus on. That's not in our budget. We don't worry about how much actually goes to pay for the jail. But we have to run a fiscally sound court. We are using taxpayer money. And so that is why I find it very important to find other ways to impose justice without causing such hardship on our economy that our people are not buying groceries because they're paying fines. That's not justice, in my opinion. Every individual who walks into my court has the opportunity to do community service in lieu of the fine. That is an amount on each citation that the municipality keeps for themselves for use within the municipality. Any person can do that, regardless of their economic background. That work goes back to the community, and the community benefits. Now, if someone prefers to write a check and pay their fines and fees, they can also do that. That works very well for our community also. But I, as a judge, I don't make that my priority. I am here to impose justice. So I do it in a fiscally sound way, but I make sure that there is a true separation between the court and the town. I'm not a money-making organization, and I will never be looked at that way because my job is very different from that of the municipality and of the police. I serve a different purpose, and as long as I feel that justice has been imposed, that justice is being served in my court, and that the public is changing their behavior, and that public safety is my priority, that's what justice is.
Thank you, Sonia Ruiz. Our time allows me to invite our discussants to ask another question of the candidates for municipal judge. Either one of you. Thank you.
I'm game. There's a lot of discussion in our community right now and in Santa Fe about the future of the Gila River. Now, we get a lot, we mentioned tourism. We get a lot of tourism here because of our natural resources, including the last wild and free river in New Mexico. I wonder if the candidates could speak to whether they feel it's appropriate for the city of Silver City, the town of Silver City, being the largest city close to the Gila River, to take a position one way or another on whether to support diversion of the river or to preserve it in a wild state.
And I think that's a question for the candidates for mayor and council or for...
For mayor and council.
For mayor and council. Would one of you care to volunteer to be the first to respond to that question?
I'll volunteer.
Linda Amon-Smith, we pass the mic this direction.
Pass the mic this way.
You know, we've already had government entities coming out one on one side or the other of the diversion of the Gila River. And I don't know the opinion of the other councilors or of the soon-to-be mayor, but let me tell you that the Gila is a huge resource that really does contribute to our economy here. There was a study done a few years ago by Headwaters Economics that put some dollars and cents to how much the tourism dollars here are directly related to being able to hike and see the Gila and go sleep by the Gila and wait in the Gila and rubber raft the Gila. And it is substantial. I wish I had the number in front of me, but I don't. There are economic benefits to us. There are tourism benefits to us. There are ecological benefits to us about the Gila. And I personally, I'm just speaking personally, find the idea of diverting it to be economically really unsound, ecologically really unsound, and in terms of the future of our town, really unsound. That's just me speaking as a candidate. So I think, yes, we ought to at some point, if the council could take it a position against, I'd be happy about that.
Thank you, Linda Amon-Smith. Other candidates for councilor? Guadalupe Cano?
I too, am of the belief that the council should take a stand. I agree with you that it should be that one. But it'll depend on what the council decides as a group. But I think it's important that the state and the legislature knows that the community is going to be united and going to stand together and protect the Gila as much as possible.
Rebecca Spann?
I agree with both of you. However, we do not have a say as a city. So it's not a city issue. So it's an individual issue, and people in southern New Mexico are going to have to take a stand together. But as a city issue, it's not our issue.
And Michael Morones, candidate for mayor.
Now, that is a question that I would have never even thought of preparing myself for. How does it relate to the city? You know, we don't use the Gila Basin for our water. We don't rely on it to serve our residents or the other 10,000 people we serve for water. But it does have a very positive economic indirect benefit to us. You know, those who fish, those who hunt, those who utilize the Gila National Forest and love the fact that we have this free-flowing river is a tremendous benefit to us. And there is a individualistically, there's a very great fear that if it was diverted, that we might it may look just like the Rio Grande does as we're crossing the bridge going into Las Cruces, where this once beautiful river is dry, and we don't want that, and it would be very harmful to us. Now I don't know what kind of action we can take as a town. except for maybe helping educate our community in participating in what has already been going on and in future discussions and future movement. We just need to ensure that everybody stays on board, and we just need to advertise and promote that education that those individuals do, and then that way the will of our people is added to the will of everybody who's working on this on these projects and the Water Settlements Act and everything else that's been running through discussions. I think we could become an education source, but I would limit it at that at this point.
Thank you, Michael Morones. Let me ask a very quick question that I think may be on the minds of some of our listeners. Is it not the case that cities can pass resolutions, which of course don't have the force of law, they're not ordinances, but cities have called on the federal government to withdraw troops from Vietnam, from Iraq, from various places where troops have been stationed and are involved in hostilities. Cities have passed resolutions calling for different economic programs. Would it be reasonable to think that if a dozen, 35, 50 municipalities in the state of New Mexico passed resolutions opposing diversion of water from the Gila, that would have some political impact? Would anyone care to speak to that? Michael Morones?
Sure. I'll start. I would say, yes, it would have an impact. If you had a large number of municipalities passing resolutions in support or against any diversion, that would have some sort of an impact. It helps illustrate collective bodies coming to a consensus. Now, the difficult part is making sure that community comes to a consensus, and what being an open and inclusive and government, what do we need to put in place to ensure that we included all opinions in that discussion? Would it mean that we would have to have a body of meetings ourselves and just utilize a tremendous amount of resources to actually get to the point that we feel that we have a consensus? There's almost a debate and discussion whether that exercise is worth our efforts in going forward.
Thank you. Would any of the candidates for city council care to speak to that particular question?
These water laws are state laws. They're agreed upon by states. I agree. It's resources that we're spending that we really don't have. So unless you have somebody that's going to get out there on their own and promote these things, cities don't really have the resources to spend on this.
Thank you, Rebecca Spann. Linda Amesmith.
A perfect opportunity for some practicums for Aldo Leopold students, other high school students, and other students to do sampling and research among the citizenry. Zero cost, fold it into a class, make it be part of the class thing. So there are ways to gather that public input via technology and via educational opportunities that would inform us. And I really like the idea of using alternative ways to become informed.
Thank you. Guadalupe Cano? Nothing to add to that. All right. Thank you. For listeners who are not clairvoyant, there were a number of head nods when zero cost was said. We'll take a brief break, and then we'll return to Civil Discourse, the Candidates Roundtable.
This is Gila Members Community Radio and Civil Discourse with your host, Jamie Newton, on KURU, 89.1 FM, Silver City, serving Southwest New Mexico and beyond via the web at gmcr.org. Now let's resume our Civil Discourse.
Welcome back to Civil Discourse, our special program, the Candidates Roundtable, with all six candidates for office in the March 4th, 2014 elections in Silver City. At this point in our program, I will invite our two discussants, professional journalists, to reflect on what they've heard, and we will then have concluding statements by our six candidates. John Crow.
Well, I'd like to stay on the topic of the Gila River for a moment, but not exactly on the Gila River itself, but on all the other proposals. We seem to always want to talk about diversion or not diversion, but the town actually has something to gain or lose from this whole thing. And it's something that the town has worked to get, and that is a regional water system. And so, you know, we don't have to pass a negative resolution. We could pass a positive resolution encouraging the powers that be to make sure we get some money for our regional water system. Okay, and that's a water system that stretches from here to the airport, okay, and back. And so there is some positive things that we can do, okay? And another issue, minimum wage. We haven't gotten industry here in many, many, many years. We shouldn't hold off because the hope that it might come tomorrow. You know, we've waited, and our economic development groups have done absolutely zero, okay? But they all oppose paying a fair wage to the lower-end workers. The people who service our food shouldn't get paid a reasonable wage. Why? Are we elitists? Do we believe in slavery? I mean, this is what it is akin to when we can't bring ourselves to say everybody's going to get something closer to a living wage. And if you cook my food, you don't deserve it. It's not right. Okay, so we have to work this out in a socially responsible way, where we don't have the great haves and the ones who struggle to provide the great haves with services. Somehow that went out. We were supposed to go out a long time ago. Oh, I guess I've ranted enough.
Richard Mahler, your reflections.
Oh, Jamie, at the risk of diverting your your plan here, I'm going to raise a couple of questions that that weren't brought up, but I think are important. And one is that wasn't addressed in any of the statements.
And I will ask all six candidates to listen, because you'll have an opportunity for a closing statement. And during that opportunity, you may respond to something you're about to hear.
Okay. One is the deteriorating infrastructure of this city. I see the Public Works Department sending out trucks to clean out the sewers, and I know our sewage system and water delivery system is very antiquated. Some of the streets are in very bad condition. Sidewalks are falling apart. I wonder if the candidates could address some of these infrastructure problems that are really long-term, expensive. You know, how much of a priority should that be to our city council? The second thing is, it's great that we have a couple of opposed candidates here, but in most municipal elections here, it's the people are running unopposed. And I wonder if you could reflect a little bit on how we get more community participation in our democratic process on the local level here, which has been very minimal in the 8 years that I've lived here.
Why don't we go from my left on around and begin with Guadalupe Cano? So there are two questions here, and they're fairly different. I would suggest that you choose one and perhaps then give less emphasis to the other. One is what the town can do about disintegrating infrastructure, if I can summarize that well enough. And the second has to do, could you give a summary?
How to get more participation in our electoral process on the municipal level.
Greater participation than just coming out to vote and then reserving the right to either applaud or complain at whatever you do.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with the second question, which is about getting more people involved. I think that a lot of times, unless there's some really strong situation that people are concerned about, such as the gross receipts tax that the commissioners tried to pass, it's very hard to get people involved. Myself, personally, I chose not to run until now because I like my town councilor. He's done an excellent job, and there was no need to oppose him. I felt like this was the time to do it because he was going to become our mayor. So,
thank you, Guadalupe Cano. Linda Amon Smith.
So you're saying that satisfaction doesn't lead to, you know, involvement.
Yes,
yikes.
Unfortunately.
Well, just to be, you know, a bookend here, I'll take infrastructure. I'll take infrastructure for 200. Infrastructure is the underlying capital projects that keep us running. And there has been, over the past couple of years, especially as the stimulus money died away, hardly any infrastructure funds coming from the state. And that's the way that it works. So while we have a governor who really applauds that, you know, they're not raising taxes, we're suffering down here for infrastructure. If you look at the most recent capital projects that the town has approved, we do have money allocated every year for sidewalks. There is money allocated, but it's probably not enough to do those big, massive capital projects. This is a thing where we really have got to, dare I say, be politically active to on both the municipal, county, and state levels to have people look at infrastructure and realize that it is absolutely important for our future. The more that we delay our infrastructure, the more our future suffers. I like to say none of us drink from wells that we dug, so we better start digging some wells for the future. We better start paving some things for the future.
Thank you, Linda Amon Smith. Rebecca Spann.
I have a couple of things I'd like to say. We have this Adopt a Median program in this town, and the Republican Party adopted this median that's particularly tricky on the highway. And so I called the Main Street Project, who is supposed to be supporting this project, to say, what can you do to help us? Because we need to block off these lanes to do some work on this highway. And they get all this money from the city, and they were offering nothing. Oh, you need to call the highway department if you need to close the highway. Then the second thing I wanted to say, and I almost forgot what it was.
About participation?
Participation. I put my name on the ballot because we had three races that there was nobody running against the other side. And I just thought, this is so wrong. So that's why I jumped in this race.
Thank you, Rebecca Spann. And Michael Morones, candidate Thank for you. Mayor.
Infrastructure improvements, a very tricky animal, mainly due to the fact that it's very expensive. It has to be done slowly, and if it's going to be done out of city coffers, very slowly. Historically speaking, most large infrastructure projects have been done through state and federal granting opportunities where we just had to come up with a match, and that's been very useful and was great during times of economic boom. Of course, this is an economic decline, so logically flowing, we've had fewer granting opportunities, so we haven't been doing as many large infrastructure projects. But as it was stated earlier, we do budget what little that we have, and we're trying to prioritize and maintain what we can within our means. And then if the economy grows and granting opportunities grow, we're going to try to work on getting those grants and improving our infrastructure. On the candidate side, an interesting thing that I've learned is the odd fact that Silver City is one of, I believe, only three municipalities in the state that doesn't pay its council. Mm-hmm. And what one might think, well, we have Baird and Hurley and Santa Clara. How do these small municipalities pay? Well, they only pay small stipends and such. No one's getting rich off of being a participant in their communities. But what that does is how many people want to put themselves out to work, to give the time, to show up to these forums, knowing that not only does grief potentially follow, but you're out of pocket for everything, and that doesn't necessarily attract all the possible candidates that you would have. It is also interesting that in order to pay your candidates or your council, it has to be approved through referendum.
And it was tested at least a couple decades ago, and it failed. So the town has chosen to reduce that field for whatever reason. I do it just because I'm blessed. I was born and reared in this community, and I love it here. I thought it gave me a good education at Silver High and a great education at Western New Mexico, and because I'm a successful businessman, I feel I need to give my time, so I don't need to be paid. But there are those who say, "You mean you want me to do something? Use my time, not get paid, take myself out of my working environment and take less." There's an interesting dilemma with that. And it's not necessarily a right or wrong answer, but I think that's one of the pieces to that issue.
Thank you, Michael Moronis. We'll now turn to two-minute closing statements, and Benny Montes, candidate for municipal judge, I would like to begin with you, please, sir.
Okay, I feel that I've had some experience in municipal court. I ran twice, I've been elected, so I've been a deputy, I've been a probate judge, so I'm a little bit aware of the courts and both sides of the law. So I figure I am qualified. Maybe I don't have all whatever Judge Reese has in her background, but she's been there a while, way before, after me. But I plan, if I'm elected, to catch up to her. Thank you.
Thank you, Benny Montes. Sonia Ruiz, candidate for municipal judge.
In closing, I'd like to remind you that I am your current municipal judge, that I have not chosen to run for this office as an afterthought or as a way to ease myself into retirement. This is my career. I am a true public servant. I do what I do because I enjoy what I do. I believe that I work hard and I have made a good impact on our community. As all of you can probably guess, judges who do their jobs well do not win popularity contests. And we don't win popularity contests because we cannot allow offenders to get away with breaking the law. But what I hope to show the constituents of my community is that my goal is to make our community safe. My goal is to treat each person with dignity and respect. And my goal is to ensure that everybody has equal access to justice. When you come in my court, you are innocent until you're proven guilty. And I hold myself to these standards. I live by the Code of Judicial Conduct. And I understand, on day one, I'm ready to continue working. I'm going to move our court forward. I'm going to continue to include the members of my community. I will seek methods of running our court fair, firm, and impartially. And I also understand that I am a member of one of the most esteemed branches of government. I am not a politician. I'm not here to promise you that I'll give you this for your vote. But what I will tell you is that I will protect the independence of the judiciary. I will make sure that my office is impartial and that I serve each one of the constituents with respect. I am a true public servant. Thank you very much for the time and for allowing me to be here.
Gracias por su apoyo. Por favor de votar el día 4 de marzo. Por su juez y amiga, Sonia Ruiz, estoy para servirles. Thank you very much to my community.
Thank you, Sonia Ruiz, candidate for municipal judge, and Guadalupe Cano, candidate for counselor, District 4.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank Gila Members Community Radio for sponsoring this forum. I look forward to serving everyone, not just in District 4, but in the whole city, and I look forward to hearing from everyone about what they want to see change, what they like, you know, what we can do to make things a better community. And I just would again remind everyone, no matter what district you're from, please vote to approve the continuation of the public safety tax. It is incredibly important for our community to remain safe. Thank you.
And may I ask you to just say what that will look like on the ballot? What is that called? What should people see? There's a number to that, 1225. Will that appear on the ballot? Does anyone know that?
It's a for or against.
Yes?
Yeah, the only question on the ballot.
It's the only question on the ballot. So that is what people are being asked to pay attention to. Yes, thank you. Linda Amon-Smith, candidate for Councillor District 2.
Thank you. I want to say again that I am a strong believer in inclusive community local economic development, and that economic development means that we work here on building our small businesses, keeping them, encouraging them, and developing what I call entrepreneurial capacity within the town. I want to remind you, because I said it before, that my favorite thing in the world is learning new things and then helping other people make things better. I am good at research. I'm good at writing. I really appreciate information, so I like to listen to people. And I am pretty good at working well with diverse groups. So I want to promise one thing, and that is that as a counselor, I will hold regular open discussion meetings with folks where we can gather in group and really talk about things that we love and things that we would like to make better together. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda Amon-Smith. Rebecca Spann, candidate for counselor for District 2.
I want to thank you for having this forum. It's been a pleasure getting to meet the other candidates, and no matter who wins in District 2, I think you have two great candidates. So good luck choosing, you guys.
Thank you very much. Michael Moronis, candidate for mayor.
Yes. Thank you, Gila members, Community Radio, and Civil Discourse, for having this forum. It's educational, and it illustrates one of the most important things and fundamental things that I have found over the last 4 years is governance is very educational. You don't know everything. I don't know everything. But I look forward to being a critical thinker. And as I learn new things, trying to come to the best decisions I can and help ensure that I support the health, safety, and welfare of our community. And I do also want to convey to all the listeners that they do need to make sure that they get out and vote. I've heard people say from our District 4 that, well, Lupe is unopposed. You're unopposed. Why should I vote? Well, there is the tax question. There is the municipal judge that we all have to vote for. So there is a reason to vote for everybody in all districts. Please get out and vote. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we've completed our closing statements. It's probably fair to say that all of you have said something to really encourage the citizens to be more involved in the direction of the community, whether your perspective is that of the city council and the mayor or of the judicial branch of government. And I'll have to ask Kyle a question about the radio station. Would we be violating any law if on our program page for Civil Discourse related to this program, which we will be rebroadcasting and podcasting, we have a piece of information from each of the candidates that, whether that's an email address, a website, a telephone number, that would allow our listeners to know how they can communicate with you, to ask you questions, if they were very drawn to what you said, how they can become involved in helping you to get elected once the election is over, how they can become volunteers to move the community forward. Are we able to do that?
I'm not an attorney, but I'll risk it. We have the contact information that is available on the town website. We'd be happy to put that to post that and make that available for anyone. And if anyone calls in, we'd be happy to refer them to you.
You being the candidates.
Of course.
Very good.
Yes.
Thank you. I am loath
Let me add that in the coming weeks that you'll hear some recordings of the candidates making statements regarding their campaigns. And so we will be running those from time to time, sprinkled through the weeks leading up to the election. So we've made that offer to all of the candidates to be able to prepare those statements, and we can broadcast them and people can hear them.
I am loath to release the last 2 or 3 minutes of our program time, and so I would like to ask our two experienced journalists, one after the other, because journalism is, in a sense, a dialogue with the community, and I know you do get responses to the things that you've written. In about a minute each, what would you like voters to hear from you? What would you like voters to do as the election approaches within a few weeks? What is your message to the electorate? A simple question, I know. Richard Mullen.
What would I like the electorate to do?
What would you like voters, if a voter came to you and said, Richard Mullen, you've just been in conversation with these candidates, you've been in this community, you've been writing about all manner of things through the years, and John Crow similarly. What should I, as a voter, know? What should I do? What should I be paying attention to?
Well, I think all the issues that we brought up, for one thing. And I would just like to put in a few words for asking people to try to not only support local businesses, but also to support local media. Because it's very easy in our society right now to just plug into sources of information that already resonate with what you believe or that resonate with your interest in what's outside of our community, whether it's a special interest that you have or national news or your professional news. But we have some great resources for community information here, including this radio station, but also what John does. And we're lucky to be a small town with 2 daily newspapers, a number of radio stations that are commercial and non-commercial. And I would just encourage people to stay as informed as they can about what's going on in this town and use that in making the decision about who to elect to these offices.
Thank you. John Crow.
Well, I think more important than even voting is to be involved in between. And that's a very difficult thing. You know, people come out to vote, but then you never see them at council meetings. You never see them at commissioners' meetings. They disappear. And there's a particular attitude that is troubling. And it's not just here, but it's a them and us. The town does it to us. Okay, and I'm a bit more of a socialist than that, because a town is a community, and that's based on commune, where we're all part of this. Okay, the town doesn't do it to us only in the fact that we're not involved. And when we're not involved, then it's somebody else doing it to us. And that's unfortunate, so I would like to see more involvement on many levels.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Civil Discourse, our special edition of the Candidates Roundtable. I'm your host, Jamie Newton.